CDC's division, Quarantine and Border Health Services, is located in the Division of Global Migration and Quarantine. What I'd like to cover is what our quarantine branch has been doing to build partnerships and enhance workforce development. The mission of the Quarantine and Border Health Services branch is to protect the health of the public from communicable diseases through science, partnerships, and response at U.S. ports. I'd like to highlight that partnerships is so important to us that we've actually included it in our mission statement. Quarantine station staff rely on the assistance of our partner agencies to achieve the mission of protecting the health of the public. Before 1967, the quarantine system had a large workforce. We had over 600 employees who, among other things, conducted direct inspection of all arriving international travelers. However, in 1969, Surgeon General William Stewart's quote that the war against infectious diseases has been won sort of illustrates the belief at the time that we had infectious diseases under control. There were massive vaccination programs, new antibiotics that essentially had been successful against polio, smallpox, yellow fever, and mosquito-borne diseases. Over time, the quarantine system was reduced to 8 stations and about 70 employees. In 2004, there was a renewed interest in the quarantine system due to the emergence of new illnesses, such as SARS, and also the threat of bioterrorism. We began a revision of operations and expansion of our stations and staff. We now have 20 stations and approximately 100 employees who are located around the country at 10 major international airports and at 2 land border stations, as you can see on this map. But there are 326 ports of entry into the United States. So we cover the 326 ports of entry by dividing the country into jurisdictions depicted by the colored areas of the map. Each station has responsibility for preventing the introduction of communicable diseases at the airports, seaports, and land borders that provide international points of entry within their jurisdiction. Our mission is supported by the Public Health Service Act of 1944, which provides a basis for the federal government's quarantine authority. The HHS Secretary has statutory responsibility for preventing the introduction, transmission, and spread of communicable diseases from foreign countries into the United States. So, for example, at international ports of entry and from one state or possession into another. The authority has been delegated from the Secretary to the Director of CDC. CDC only has the authority to quarantine if any of these 9 illnesses listed here are suspected. SARS and new or reemergent flu viruses, such as avian flu, are the most recent additions. Quarantine is one of many tools that is in the toolbox that quarantine station staff have to use to protect the health of the public. On a daily basis, quarantine stations achieve their mission through a number of activities. The first or primary activity of a quarantine public health officer is responding to reports of illness on ships, aircrafts, and at land border crossings. We also inspect animal and human products that may pose a threat to human health. Some stations also distribute life-saving immunobiologic and investigational drugs. For example, we have botulism antitoxin kept in fridges at some of our stations, so when requested, we can send that immediately to provide that to folks who need it. We also plan and prepare for emergency response. The picture on the slide shows one of our quarantine public health officers in Atlanta responding to an illness on board a flight during a live exercise that we did at the Atlanta airport with Delta Airlines, American Red Cross, the local and state health departments. In addition, the quarantine stations also monitor health and collect medical information for new immigrants and refugees. They inspect cargo and hand-carried items for possible vectors of human infectious diseases. There are a lot of things that people travel with or bring with them. They may not realize pose a risk. For example, animal trophies or Haitian drums. They also provide travelers with essential health information. On the slide there, you see a picture of our travel health alert notice. We had a couple of those out on the chairs, and you'll hear more about those later. We also respond to mass migration emergencies, and most importantly, form partnerships for disease surveillance and control. The U.S. quarantine stations do not work alone. To fulfill our mission to protect the health of the public, the quarantine system relies on a vital network of partnerships. that you can see here depicted in this graphic. It comes from a 2005 Institute of Medicine report that was done on the quarantine system. And you can see in the center is the core, are the quarantine stations and CDC. In the system ring, the pink ring, you can actually see some of our key partners, Emergency Medical Services, Customs and Border Protection, as well as our state and local public health agencies. So taking all that background, we're going to sort of turn this presentation towards the training and education side of things. So because of this need to enhance our workforce development for expanding the quarantine system, that's the system being including our own staff as well as our many partners, the quarantine training education team was formed in March of 2006, essentially to provide training, education, and communication expertise and support for those partners and for our own staff. And several of the members of this team are actually here today to present to you. The quarantine training and education team follows a systematic process for health education. Essentially, it's a cyclical process that starts with needs assessment, getting response from the audience, then development of those materials, pilot testing again with the audience, implementing it, and then evaluating. Since the team is new, our efforts are just beginning, and many of the projects that you'll be hearing about today are sort of in the early stages around the needs assessment stage of development in this process. So the essential goals of our needs assessment activities and evaluation activities are to build and strengthen relationships with our partners, to develop appropriate training and content and communication messages, and to provide these trainings and communication through preferred and effective formats. So over the next few slides, I'll provide a few examples of these activities based on the various audiences that we've begun working with. Customs and Border Protection is one of our primary partners. We refer to them as CBP for short, because the officers actually see all international travelers and cargo as they enter the country. They play a key role in public health surveillance at our ports of entry. We rely on them to notify us if they happen to see someone or something that may pose a risk to infectious disease. Our needs assessment and evaluation activities with CBP include focus groups, interviews, and evaluations on training activities and a new job aid that you see depicted here. We're also planning additional discussions and a web-based survey with CBP officers. You'll hear a little bit more about this relationship and the activities that we're doing in David Hunter's presentation. Airlines are required by law to report illness on death or death on board a flight to the nearest quarantine station before they land. Because of that, this relationship is very important, and we've begun our efforts with airlines by conducting a focus group with American Airlines in Miami. Six participants from American Airlines included managers and trainers came together with us to actually talk about reporting of illness, some of the barriers to doing that, what communication mechanisms already exist that we can easily communicate about emergencies, also their training preferences, and they also provided feedback on a fact sheet that we had developed, the one depicted here, that was used to communicate about a measles outbreak that had been going on in Europe around the World Cup. And we wanted to find out from them, did this work for you? Did you see it? What did you think? We're also planning interviews and roundtable discussions with additional airlines, Delta, United, American, and Continental. And we're slowly working in the direction to identify the right folks to talk with and move forward in that project. EMS often are the first to hear about an ill person in an airport environment, and we rely on them to then let us know whether we need to respond. We conducted roundtable discussions at an all-day EMS and CDC collaborative meeting and at the Aircraft Rescue Firefighting Working Group annual meeting. The discussions provided information on their preferred training topics, communication methods, and whether there were opportunities that may already exist for us to partner with them on training. They also reviewed a job aid to support reporting of illness to CDC. And we have additional interviews planned with some of their training coordinators. Although travelers and general public aren't a workforce, we also use needs assessment activities to help guide communication efforts with them. You'll hear more about the Travel Health Alert Notice during Rebecca Myers' presentation later during the session. And we plan to conduct additional focus groups with travelers on communication materials to get broader representation and additional feedback from other parts of the country. We also have plans to test quarantine and pandemic influenza messages with the public through focus groups early next year. For public health practitioners, we've developed fact sheets for their use of communities to convey the recently released community strategies for pandemic influenza mitigation guidance document. The fact sheets were sent to ASTO, NACHO, CSTE, and some local health departments, and as well as internal CDC subject matter experts for review. They were given a feedback form to provide, and actually we're in the process of collecting all those comments and trying to incorporate them into the fact sheets we developed. The idea is that the fact sheets could be used as a template by our local state partners to communicate with their local communities about the guidance and recommendations for non-pharmaceutical interventions. In addition, we're planning some focus groups with physicians to get feedback on the physician portions of the travel health alert notices. For those of you who picked up those yellow cards, one side has information for travelers and the other side for physicians, and Rebecca will tell you more about that. Finally, we have used needs assessment and evaluation strategies for our own internal training activities. Each year, we conduct a conference to bring together station and headquarters staff to address issues, network, enhance skills. Evaluations are collected at the end of each session and analyzed each year to plan for the next conference. In addition, we form a planning committee each year based on attendees from the previous conference to help plan. And that's been very helpful in making sure that we actually address issues that are relevant and important to our staff. A web-based survey was conducted on training needs to assess sort of the preferred training topics, formats, and frequency, and as well as locations for training for our own quarantine staff, done with RTI, and you'll hear more about that as well from Dr. Burke's presentation. And essentially, we're using the results of that to plan next year's conference, as well as web-based trainings and other activities throughout the rest of the year. So hopefully this has given you a very broad overview to our program and some of our workforce development activities. You'll get to hear specific details about some of these from the next presenters, and I'd like to just remind you to hold your questions to the end.